everybody. I'm back on the road. I am back on the road. Working out a new hour. It's a long process, and we're at the very beginning of it. But I am going to be at New York Comedy Club in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm going to be there July 16th through the 18th doing five shows. Greg Stone will be with me. And then Just for Laughs Montreal, we added a late show to Club Soda on July 25th. It's a late show, I believe, at 9:30 now. Might be 9 o'clock. DanSoder.com for full ticket info, and where you can also get tickets to see me July 31st and August 1st at the Albany Fuddy Bone. Might be bringing Sag Daddy to God. It might be happening. DanSoder.com, full ticket info, and all tickets available there. I'll see you on the road. Hope you're having a good week. It's just two white guys in hats sitting on a couch.
I know. I saw your hat, and I was like, okay, good.
I wore the hat. I got to get up early for the regs, and I was like, dude, I'm not taking a shower. I'm like, fuck this shit.
I didn't shower
What's
today.
Funny about white dudes in ball caps now is we just look like ice at lunch.
I know. Also, we have to know about our teams.
Yeah, dude.
Black guys don't have to know about their teams. People are coming up to me saying, like different players on the team.
Are you not
like,
a Braves guy?
Dude, I don't give a fuck.
Because
I like being from Atlanta. That's what I care about.
I'll tell you what that is. Michael Rowland.
Tell me.
Hilarious comedian. For those of you watching the podcast going, Soder, you need to do intros. Michael Rowland. Go watch his stand-up. He's also on the show Animal Control, Joel McHale on Fox.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
White guys with pointing out sports facts and hats is our autism.
Yeah.
It's like where I see you and I go like, David Justice. And if you don't immediately go, one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
I go.
I know. People have really gotten in my ass about it. Sometimes I'll lie. Sometimes I'll just go like, yeah.
Yes.
And that's enough.
That's enough.
That's the trick. For somebody.
Anytime you're wearing sports memorabilia and someone says something to you, you just go, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, if I see you in a hat, I'm going to try to relate. That's how I always related to men.
Yeah.
Was talking sports. I didn't have a dad, and I learned when my mom was dating guys. That's how I related to my dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My dad didn't like me. He was out of my life. So when he would call me, I better have fodder.
Mm-hmm.
I better talk to him about something. So I talked to him about the 49ers or the San Francisco Giants. It's what literally made my sports fan.
This is what I do with my dad. My dad, I think, does like me. We don't have any of the same interests at all.
At all.
At all.
Does he get comedy?
Yes, but no. Like, no, his sense of humor kind of sucks. But you know what he is? He's like, I watched him give a speech at my sister's wedding, and I watched my mom give a speech. My mom has good taste. Okay. My mom was like, we're watching this. We're watching like the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And she'd be like, this is good shit.
Yeah.
And then my dad would be like, I heard this joke about a Chinese guy today.
And you go, like,
whoa.
I think that's the recipe for a comedian is one funny parent that gets it and one parent that's just sheer drive.
Drive. And he really was, when he did his wedding speech, he was good.
He was.
His wedding speech, people were coming up like, your dad's great. He just said a bunch of stuff. He crushed. My mom on stage, awful.
But a writer.
Awful.
But she's a writer.
No.
No, off stage.
No. She's got taste.
Oh, that's
she's
it.
Got she taste. Can't, she got but shit. Everything she said, I was like, ooh, this is rough. This is tough. Mom's coming off as very unlikable right now.
Ooh, but she's got the taste. You know she's what she wants
taste.
To perform.
She's got taste.
My
no execution.
My recipe was my dad was like world class funny.
Really?
Yeah. And my mom is entertaining. My mom is. She's very entertaining. She can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
My mom can be funny. My dad was funny.
Yeah.
So my dad was always funny. My dad was like, he would throw jokes that it took me 10 years after I saw him last, like, get it and be like, oh, that's funny.
Wow.
My mom can perform her ass off.
What do you mean by that?
My mom is like, can like hold court at a party. She's like a presence.
Yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
My mom's got a large presence. And I realized, I was like, oh, that's... It's like when you see athletes and one of their, like an NFL player and their dad played in the NBA, but then you find out their mom was like a track star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and you
go,
that's why you have that mix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was it. Gary was like super funny, my dad, and Trish, my mom, was like very, she's very performative.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a dramatic, and I mean this in a positive way.
Yeah.
She's like got like stage presence.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh yeah. So like I was just in Tampa and one of my mom's friends that she used to work with, like, 30 years ago at this insurance company was like, oh, you got your mom's performance, you know? And I was like, oh yeah. And he was like, your mom's like a large presence. And
yeah.
And when you see that in your parents, you go, oh,
it does. I see it in my dad, absolutely, when he's on stage. But then my dad's, like, I remember when I was a kid, my mom was like, we're going to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You're going to fucking love this.
Yeah.
And I was like watching it like, oh my God.
It's the best movie.
This guy's
awesome. Time.
This guy's getting away with everything. And my dad's sitting there like, this fucking kid. My dad's like, that guy's like, this fucking piece of shit kid. Yeah.
He's, but by the way, if you're a dad, work. Of course.
Yeah, dude.
Was he getting that mad though?
Yeah, he was getting riled up like, why are we showing him this shit? My mom's like, shut up.
Oh, you square.
You fucking square.
Yeah, that is, when your parents come and watch you in Atlanta, are they like, have they ever given you notes that hurts?
No. They're like, my parents are nice. They're supportive. They want me to do, my mom wants me to be clean. My mom, the first comic she took me to see was Bill Cosby when I was 12.
Whoa.
Yeah. Very sweet, supportive lady. She's like, we're going to see Bill Cosby.
That didn't age well?
No. And she'd be like, why can't you be clean like Bill? And then everything came out about Bill Cosby. I was like, why don't you just let me do my fucking thing?
It's not great.
Where I'm like the dirtiest version of myself on stage and then off stage. I'm like, you know.
A sweet boy.
Yeah, I'm not doing a sweet boy that's shit. Not
fucking sleeping women. That's the craziest shit. That is the craziest shit because it really was. People are young. Young people now don't understand that before Cosby got in trouble,
dude,
he was the prime standard of like, why don't you act this way? Why aren't you like Bill Cosby?
I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that show. It was awesome. He was, oh my God.
Cosby Show is the, if not the greatest sitcom of all time.
I never watched that many episodes. I was about to do the baseball thing where I was like, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen like a few episodes of the Cosby Show, but I never watched it.
You're younger than me.
Yeah.
I grew up when it was on television, when it was like, when the Cosby Show came on, you were like, yo, I remember the last Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. I remember they're like, this is it. Cosby Show is going away. And you're like, no, this is like a standard. Mm-hmm. Like it can't go, like people were mad, like the last Cheers. You're like, no, this can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And then
gone.
Hannibal fucking took him out.
Took him
off a riff.
Off a fucking riff. Off That's how riff. Hot Hannibal was at the time.
Hannibal's so famous, his riff killed an icon.
Killed a fucking icon.
That couldn't be killed.
Mm-hmm. That couldn't be taken down. People knew. He's on the news being like Spanish Fly. Have you seen those clips?
Dude, I'll show you even better one. It? Big J showed me one from the Cosby Show where he's like, oh, your barbecue sauce. And he goes, it gets you the little bit of the, I put something in it that gives you the little bit of the, or whatever he does. He does a Cosby thing where he's like, gives you the weeble wobbles. Jay showed me that clip and I was like, he's like the BTK killer.
Yeah,
he's like bragging about it in letters. Yeah. He's like, you won't catch me.
Just letting
no one
little,
can catch
little
me.
Little hints. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Waking up.
Sick fuck.
After a guy like Cosby you has to be like, no one's going to believe this. You know what I mean? That's why it's so dastardly.
Nobody's going to believe you.
When you wake up, you are not going to believe.
And you're like, you fucking monster. Yeah. He got out of jail,
what
didn't he?
What a monster. I don't know. I really don't know.
Did you look that up? I think there was like something that they let him out. I'm amazed. This is my, I'm amazed with the human brain that there are people that still defend him. That go like, you motherfuckers, he was fine. And you're like,
well, I think usually
he was released in 2021.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude, he's out. And he's got those homeless, he's got old dog eye now.
Yeah.
Where it's all cloudy and he's like
puffy.
Where are they keeping him?
Did you see that photo, the video of him?
Where he goes. You know what that is though? That's like you know what that reminds me of is when Kevin Spacey did the video where of him like, in character. And he's like, y'all missed me, didn't you? And you go, Kevin, no. Fuck you. We don't need this right now. That was like Cosby when he did that, like, because he was trying to be funny. Because back in the day.
I still got it.
That would have gotten.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 90s, him doing that, everyone would have been like, Bill. And now they're
Bill's
like.
Crazy.
Fucking.
I know.
Just lives in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yo, dude, imagine bumping into old, out of jail Bill Cosby. Because I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't have the nuts to say shit.
No, I wouldn't.
I'd go, sir, himself is the perfect hour of stand-up comedy. Watch that Dennis bit.
Got it on VHS, baby.
It is.
From my mom. That was my mom just being like grooming me, just being like, look at this. How about this? She saw, like, she put me into comedy when I was a kid. She was like, check this. Look at this.
Have you ever talked to her about Cosby? Now?
Oh, yeah. She's like, all right.
She's she does?
Yeah, she's. I get to do whatever I want. She came to a show. I'm like, you know, I'm dirty. She's like, all right, as long as you're not out there like a rascal.
That's so funny. Yeah, this is fine as long as you're not.
I didn't know how bad it could get for you, comedians. Yeah, as long as you're not a
man, that's what's so funny is back in the day when your parents found out, I'm talking about like before us, your parents had shame that you were going into the entertainment industry, that you were like a clown. Mm-hmm. But now that all these all this shit's coming up about comics, they go, did I raise a monster?
Yeah, yeah.
Did I raise a horrible kid? Yeah, yeah. Because you go, no, I just wanted to be silly. Most of us are just like, no, I just wanted to be silly fuckarounds.
It's so fun.
Yeah. And then to have that, though, where they go, oh, there is a much darker side I wasn't aware of.
Well, everybody loves that fucking narrative. I've taken like trips with my mom where you like hang out with other older people and they're like, oh, these fucking squares. I remember this one guy. I was on like a river cruise with my mom, and a guy's like, well, after Robin Williams died, it seems like these comedians are just offing themselves left and right. Are you a little depressed? And I was like, what?
I would have looked him dead in the eyes and go, I'm going to put you in my note. I'm going to name you in my note.
I'm not that clever. I'm not that quick. I was just like, no.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
That's that like, could have been masturbation.
It's like a small percentage, honestly. And I heard he had like a bad disease that he just didn't want to let progress.
Yeah, I think my mom saw all the checks and she went, substance abuse problem. No relationship with his father. She goes, it's probably the best place he could have been.
Yeah.
She really looked at it. She was like, fuck, man.
You're doing great.
This or jail?
You turn it into a fucking
probably
diamond,
all right.
Boy. Yeah, yeah, man.
Thank God I was just old enough to miss Oxycontin. I was just old enough.
For real. For real, though. Like, it really.
I'm not joking when I say that.
It really fucked so many people.
I got addicted to Percocets in high school.
Really?
Because at the time, that was the highest strength oral pain pill you could take. Mm-hmm. Oxycontins came out when I was in college and I was already an alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I already got through the pill thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If that shit would have hit in high school, I absolutely would have done it.
You still smoking the weeds?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude, what?
I gotta get back to no booze, just weed.
Oh, no booze, God. Just weed for, listen.
I keep going up.
There's people that it doesn't work. I have friends that have quit drinking and they can't do it. Yep. And I get it. If you somehow can do it, to me, it's the best mixture.
It is. It's a lovely mixture. I've done just it weed. To great success. I've done like a year with no booze, just weed, lovely life. I also got into kratoms for a little bit.
Kratom is dangerous.
Kratom's a dangerous one. It'll scratch that itch if you got a little pain itch.
I knew people that were like, kratom and also like, I never got into like Zoloft, Xanax.
No, I never got into that stuff.
When I was in college, all the hot girls would take a piece of a Xanax bar and drink on it.
And then black out?
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, this is when I'm the most insecure, when I have the least amount of money and I'm trying to get pussy. And I'm like, I'm shocked I never did Xanny bars. Shocked.
Why didn't you?
Because I didn't like them.
You didn't like how it felt?
I just didn't. After I got over Percocets when I was in high school, I was like, I don't like pills.
That's kind of how I felt. I did them once. I got them, and I did it on an airplane. I hadn't drank for like a year, and I was like flying somewhere, and I was like, time to start. Time to start again. And I took a Xanax, and then I drank a couple drinks on the flight. And my brother was like, you disappeared for an hour. I was like, what? He was like, on the flight, you were gone for an hour, and then eventually a stewardess brought you back to the seat.
Wait, you were gone? I thought you meant mentally.
No.
You just got up?
I was
gone.
I like got up. By the way, I have no memory of it. I have no memory of it. I think I went to, maybe I went to the bathroom.
Maybe you sat down in a different seat. Yeah, maybe. You go, hey, this middle seat's open.
We don't know. All I know is the stewardess brought me back to my seat after an hour, and my ID and my credit cards were gone.
We're gone?
We're gone.
Damn, dude, someone has your driver's license. Yeah, I met this guy and he insisted I take his driver's license.
Just kept saying, take it, please.
When you quit for a year, I'm always interested about this because I sometimes like fantasize what it would be like to come back to booze. Mm-hmm. But when I have friends that do come back to booze, they're like, I didn't like it. Some people don't like it because you immediately don't feel control.
Yeah. I mean,
did you get hammered when you first came back?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not like the thing is you're thinking like, okay, I'm going to come back to it. I'm going to do two.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do three. And then you're like, you remember why you like drinking. You're like, oh yeah, I'll just run this out.
I feel incredible.
Yeah. Let's just keep going. Why would we stop? More of this.
When I first quit drinking, I always would do this thing where I'd go, when I hit 10 years, I'm going to have one night of drinking. I'm going to come back for one night. And I was talking to Nate Bargatze about it. And I was like, I'm going to drink on Friday. I go, here's what I want. 10 years in, I'm going to drink. And I'll call you. I'll call Joe DeRosa. I'll call Al Jackson. I'll call all the people I used to drink with. We'll go to the creek and drink. And he's like, yeah, one night. And I went, you know what, though? I probably should drink beers on Friday night just to like get used to it for Saturday. And Nate stops and he goes, you already had two nights. And you're like, yeah, this is why I have to quit. It's summertime. Means you're trying to lose weight. Probably trying to stay in swimsuit shape. Sometimes you're working a lot. Don't have time to make those meals that build around your fitness goals. Well, guess what? Enter Factor Meals. Factor has meals built around the goals that you have in mind, whether it's weight loss, overall nutrition, if you want to do, you know, more protein, strength and workout recovery, whatever it is, every meal is crafted with functional ingredients like lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole foods, and healthy fats. Almost call them healthy farts. But what I'm saying is Factor makes good meals that you can just, it's meal prep for you. That's exactly what it is. And now you can try the newly launched ready-to-eat salads with ingredients like elote corn and edamame, plus 70 add-ons to round out your nutrition, from green juices to peanut butter energy bites. All I'm saying is if you're looking to get into shape and you need a good diet, check out Factor. And if you head to factormeals.com/soder50off and use the code soder50off, you get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscriptions only and while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details. I know that I'm afraid of getting into contracts like with cell phone providers. I'm a sucker. I sign on for a long time and I'm like, what the hell? I'm overpaying. Why in the hell didn't someone teach me better? Because there's things in life that you don't want to be transparent, like your swimsuit or your search history, but when it comes to your wireless bill, transparency is everything. That's why Mint Mobile's wireless plans have no gimmicks, no gotchas, just high-speed data and reliable coverage on T-Mobile 5G network. And right now, all plans are $15 per month, even unlimited. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/soder. That's mintmobile.com/soder. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/soder. That's it. No cash. Upfront payments of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months. Plan required. 15 per month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to 20 gigabyte hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com.
I'll tell you this. The last season of Animal Control we did, I didn't drink for the whole season. I was like, I want to be good. I want to be focused. And then at the wrap party, I was like, I'm going to do it. And very quickly, it was like, three nights. You're just like, you wake up the next day and you're like hungover. And you're like, well, we got to.
Let me get a margarita.
We got to take the edge off this.
I do still, after all this time, miss day drinking.
Yeah.
The idea of getting drunk during the day, to me, still sounds so fun. I used to like it on the road. Mm-hmm. I used to make friends with the people that work at Target because I was half in the bag.
Yeah.
When I'd go to Target for, like, socks, and I'd just be like, hey, what's your name?
When you were on the road, would you day drink up into the show?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
If I was very hungover from what it was Thursday was always travel. Friday, maybe if I drink usually hard on Thursdays because it was one show.
Yeah.
Friday, if I went really hard, I would absolutely have to drink on Saturday.
Yeah.
Shout out my friend Greg Rampage USA. He lives in Seattle. I went up there. I was doing shows in Kirkland, Washington, and I got blackout on a Friday. Just completely blacked out and woke up. One of the worst hangovers I've ever had in my life. We were supposed to get dinner. Me and Greg were supposed to get dinner Saturday before the shows. Uh-huh. I was so hungover that I had to drink three margaritas at dinner just to get even. And I remember watching him watch me be like, the fuck? And I was just like it was medicine. I was like, And then after the third one, I was like, you want to do a shot? And you're like starting to feel it again.
I'm back, baby.
Yeah, because then you're drunk again.
And yeah.
Look who came back.
Look who's okay.
But I always did feel like a rat packer when I was hammered during the day, where I was like, baby, everything's fine.
I feel like that's how guys just used to live.
Dude, and it martini lunches.
Yeah.
That really was. Like, businessmen would go get fucking drunk at lunch.
And they make business.
And then they sexually harass their secretaries when they come back. Yeah. They go, Deborah, you look good in that pencil skirt. Hold my meetings. Then they come in the office like, I wonder if they got sloppy. No one ever talks about old people at martini lunches.
I know. And they must have. They must have. They must have. Well, there's, I mean, you've watched Mad Men.
No.
No?
Never watched Mad Men.
I mean, you want to talk about martini lunches. A retrospective. That's the fucking show.
That's the whole show?
That's the whole show.
They just went, what were martini lunches? They go,
dude,
you got John Hamm.
It is like John Hamm just like at 3 p.m. on a couch laying down being like, I'm brainstorming. And then one guy pisses himself and they fire him because he couldn't handle his shit.
Yeah. That's where, man, if you were an alcoholic in the 50s, you could thrive. But if you had the actual, now that we know it's like a gene, like an addictive gene.
Yeah.
If you had
the
genetics to be an alcoholic in the 50s, you were a fucking monster.
My grandfather, huge, both of them.
Shout out.
Shout out. This one, Henry John Rowland the First. My boy came back from World War II, just got after it. And he was a salesman. His boss was a drunk. And this was back when, if you were driving drunk, the police would be like, John, what are you doing?
Take a nap.
Take a nap, John.
John,
get in the back of the cruiser. I'm taking you home.
I'll take you home. Where's the missus?
You ran it up on a damn hydrant again, John.
Yeah.
I'm taking you home.
They go, the Hendersons are going to be mad, but I'll cool it off with them. Why don't you go take a nap?
I'm going to smooth it over. Take a nap, John.
The first, I've talked about this before, but I'm fascinated about it. Adjusting to a world of DUIs must have been like, what the fuck,
dude?
Because when did that happen? Can you look up when DUIs went national?
Because
my dad had so many DUIs that I did not know about until my grandma died and I cleaned her house out and I just found all this paperwork.
Wait, really?
Yeah, my dad died in 97. My grandma died in 2023.
R.I.P. That's what, I think that's when my grandma did.
Yeah, and I had to clean out her house, mm-hmm. and I just found, like...
all of his DUIs.
A lot of paperwork. I found a lot of paperwork, where I was like, damn, I think he had at least four.
Dude, my dad was telling me his dad would just, like... he was just getting fucked up on the regular. Was never bad, was never mean.
They could hold it.
No, I think he was, like, he was...
oh,
he would, come home and be like...
oh, he was like blackout.
He was blackout. And my dad is like a very serious guy because of that. My dad is like...
yeah,
because
he watched his dad be a clown.
He was the oldest of five. Yeah, he was the oldest boy. And he was just like, I guess this is on me.
Dude.
I guess this is me now.
The kids then knew the position. They were like, yeah. I have to be the man of the house.
Yeah, my dad...
they couldn't go blog about it.
He's a very serious
man. Or podcast like our bitch asses.
I know.
1906. That
took
early.
A while to get
see,
to the
if
South.
You look up national... when was it federally a DUI? Because there were states that probably fought that. Kentucky,
yeah,
I'm thinking
specifically. The South is pretty late to stuff.
Well, Georgia, you're from Georgia.
Yeah.
But Kentucky's obsessed with bourbon and whiskeys.
They are.
So I feel like they were the last ones to go like, we have to drink.
But then you're from Colorado and that feels like out West and it feels like,
they're
like
lawless.
Don't tell us what the fuck to do.
It was very lawless. So it's a little scrambled. 80s and 2000s.
That's when it really came
DUI in. Primarily regulated by individual states, but federal involvement grew significantly in the 80s and the 2000s.
Yeah.
This is why my dad had a lot of DUIs, because I genuinely think...
he was coming out of the 70s being like, we do whatever we want.
In the Bay Area?
Yeah.
They were fucking doing yak.
Yeah.
They were doing coke. They were drinking. They were smoking fucking weed. San Francisco in the 60s and 70s was fucking wild.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine them going, you can't drive anymore. Key milestones include the 1984 National Minimum Drinking Age Act, established a 21-year-old minimum, and the 2000 passage of the 0.08 BAC national standard.
That's it.
That's what it was. There. 1984, they did that. And then 2000, President Clinton, that kid... cannibal had to go and sign legislation requiring states to adopt. I would hate it.
What
Clinton.
A fucker. He made the three strike rule and he,
you know what's funny though,
DUIs in.
My dad was dead 97, so he like was getting state DUIs.
Yeah
he wasn't getting that federal
shit.
For it became a federal case if committed on federal land.
I gotta do it.
State levels date back to early 1900s. 1906. You got
one? I got a bad one.
Did you?
bad, bad.
Can I tell you, that's the one thing I got away from was no kids, no DUIs.
That's beautiful.
My drinking was a success. How did you get it?
Oh, man. Well, it was just back in Atlanta when we were doing stand-up. This is around the time when you came down there, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe after. I don't know, before.
I did Punchline, and then I did Laughing Skull with Jordan Temple.
Yeah.
In like 2015.
And I was your host. Yeah. And I drove you to do the regular guys. Yeah. 96 Rock.
96 Rock in the morning.
Yeah. So this might have been before, because I wasn't driving for a while after this. But it was just so normal for us in Atlanta. Like, it was very, we were all drinking hard. And then it was like, just go home. It got very, it got too normal. And then I was at the Laughing Skull, and I had done a show.
Which is at a biker, was at a biker bar?
And they, not, it's just like a bar with a bunch of biker chicks on the walls, and like a giant wood penis, and
it was a good bar.
Everybody smokes inside.
It was, that's great.
Yeah. What a fun time.
Can't get mad about that.
I was fucking, I had already had some drinks, and I went outside, and there was this homeless guy that was like, he had all these American flags, and he was like, I was in the Navy. And I was like, my dad was in the Navy, brother. And he goes, really? What part? And I was like, he was a CB. And the guy's like, I always wanted to be a CB. This is the Naval Engineers. And I was like, get your ass in here. I'm buying you a drink. And then we went into the bar, and I just bought this homeless dude a bunch of drinks. We were like doing shots and beer.
That's all he wants.
Yeah. And then I got like a little, I like felt like I hit my limit. I was like, okay, I got to go. And I left him in the bar, and I went and I drove to Taco Bell on Ponce in Atlanta. And I get a text from the bar manager that's like, hey, you're banned from the bar. And I was like, why? They was like, you brought a homeless guy in here. You got him wasted. And now he's refusing to leave. I left him with drink. And he was just like, he got fucked up and he refused to leave.
You gave that guy, you let him into the chocolate factory. And then you just let the Oompa Loompas deal with him. Dude. You like brought him in and you're like, hey, that's the river of chocolate. Yeah, and he goes, well, I'm going to take a shit in there. And they go, please don't.
Please don't, but I got to go. People eat that
chocolate. So,
and then,
so you got banned from the bar?
I got banned from the bar. That was the last message I see. I get all my food from Taco Bell, fall asleep.
Do you remember your order?
Something big. I had big eyes. Big eyes, bigger than the stomach.
I always would do a gordita and a chalupa. And you're like, who are you?
Shit like that. And then also a burrito. I was like on that type of time. And so I don't remember this part, but apparently what happened is I went over and I parked and I ate my shit and then I fell asleep with it on my chest.
Oh, you were hammered.
And a cop came up. To be fair, I pulled over. I stopped the car.
Were you in a parking lot?
No, I pulled over on the side of the street. And a cop came and knocked on the window. I don't remember this. He knocked on the window and apparently what I did was I woke up and I waved at him. And I drove away.
No.
And I drove away at a very slow speed. And he pursued me for maybe 2 miles. 2 miles. I don't remember this. He pursued me for 2 miles until I eventually drove over this highway and then over some lanes of traffic up onto a curb slowly and then hit a pole slowly.
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 Just you bumped into it?
Yeah. And what I remember, this is the scary part. This is the part that's not funny to me, is where I remember coming to with my foot on an accelerator and feeling a car not moving and trying to accelerate more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, if it was any, like, if
he's
it was
just got his mag light on you looking at the other cop, like,
what the fuck?
Who the fuck is this guy?
And then he's
going,
hey. And he bangs on the window. He goes, fucking stop. And I'm like, that's what I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I'm like, and so I go to jail.
Night in jail.
I go to holding. Fulton County holding. My mom comes and picks me up. I cry. I cry. I was ashamed of myself. You know, jail or holding, not so bad. They put us all in this giant room and we watched 2.5 men for like a long time.
Men.
We watched so much 2.5 men.
Man, they're getting you ready.
And I was like, I remember there were guys over to the right.
Yeah,
there's guys over to the right. You can see all the DUI guys, and I'm like, I'm not going to sit with the pussy DUI guys.
Fucking pussy. I'm going to murder.
I'm going to sit with the real guys. All the real guys are just homeless guys that they've just taken in.
They go, I heard you take us in and buy us booze. As long as we say we're in the Navy.
And I was, I was between these two guys, and one guy, they like did an exchange over me where this guy took his sock off, and he had like a little crack in between his toes, and he gave it to the guy for a bologna sandwich.
Damn, what a good trade. Distinctly. Honestly, bologna sandwich for crack?
For a little crack?
You can't find that on. You can't find that trade on the no, outside.
No, sir, you can't. That's
how
inside.
Long were you in there,
dude? Like hours. You know, who I eventually you? Got my mom. My mom came, and I was like, I was very ashamed. I was very apologetic, and I was also what 26, 27 years old. There's nothing to punish. She was just like, yeah, you fucked up.
Damn, they took your license?
No, the cop was new. Oh, this happened. The cop had moved from Alabama. And I was like, where are you from, man? I was in the back and I was drunk. I remember this. I was like, where are you from, man? He goes, Alabama. And I was like, you're going to arrest me in my city?
That's
I was like
so
that.
Funny. I drunk like conference. That. Do you know who runs the ATL? Yeah, Outcast and
yeah,
me.
Yeah, dude.
You go, in order. I'm going to tell you who it is.
That poor police officer. And then.
You're going to arrest me in my city? The guy went, I wouldn't mind shooting you in the chest. If I could.
I'd love to shoot you in the fucking chest.
Wouldn't mind eliminating you on this earth, dude. You fucking dickhead.
Fucking.
You're going to arrest me in my city? I'd be like, I hate you.
Yeah. Very hateable.
Listen, obviously there's bad cops that do fucked up shit, mm-hmm. but there's so many good cops that have to put up with asshole shit like that.
All the time.
You go, you're going to arrest me in my city? He goes, I just got shot at in an apartment complex 3 hours ago. I don't want to deal with you.
Fuck you.
Like that ego, like drunk ego of being like, who the fuck are you?
He was also nice enough. I had forgotten something like in my car and he went back to the scene and got it and then brought it back to the jail. I think I was nicer to him after that.
Yeah, you
I
go, oh.
We had a long ride to the station.
Did you get drunk and cry? Like when my mom found out the Osco drugs was crazy. She's like, oh, you brought it back for me. I love you. And the cop's like, holy shit, you shouldn't have been driving.
No, at that point I was hardened. I was hardened by the insult.
Taco Bell?
Thank you.
I wanted my gordita.
Yo, there was a girl like that on the inside. I'll never forget. She wouldn't shut the fuck up.
I like you're talking like you did a fucking nickel.
Fuck.
You go, yeah, fuck. Man. On the inside, shit's different.
What do I regret describing it like that just now?
Girls crying on the inside. Shit's different than the outside. You wouldn't get that with your clean hands.
With your clean hands, clean record.
Yeah, with your clean record.
This lady wouldn't shut the fuck up, and they put her in just like this glass box. And she just kept screaming, let me out, let me out. Dude, for hours. And everybody just had to listen to her, and everyone was like, shut the fuck up,
oh, my
bitch.
God. Your pleas becoming annoyances
oh my
would
God.
Be my biggest concern
it
about
was
jail.
Insane.
Yeah.
The amount she was yelling. And oh my God.
It's like when you go to a hospital or an emergency room and you realize that you can't complain because there's people with much bigger issues.
Yes.
I used to go to Bellevue because it was like free. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have health insurance, it's crazy.
It's our most messed up hospital, right?
The expression Pimp just made when I said that, he was like, it's
our toughest hospital, yes, in New York City.
Bellevue is wild. And my buddy Eli, shout out to Eli, when we were waiting tables together, mm-hmm. I had to go see a doctor, and I was like, I don't have insurance. I have no money. And he's like, go down to Bellevue, bring three of your pay stubs, go to the business office. They're a nonprofit. This was 20 years ago. They're a nonprofit hospital. They'll give you a card, and it'll only cost you $25 to see a doctor based on your income. But you have to call for an appointment. So I called an appointment, and you go in, and you go like, oh, shit. You're in a waiting room with people, and they're looking at me like, what are you doing here? You have all your teeth. You have both your eyes. What do you like? You would go in there and you'd be like, I can't complain. And one time I went in for an endoscopy because I was having stomach problems. And I was in this like waiting area with people that were in so much pain that I couldn't complain at all. And I had to wait for hours.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't complain.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, can you see me? And the Jamaican nurse is like, we would see anyone we want to hold on. And then there's just a guy next to me going, ah, just making a noise that I was like, yeah, yeah, get to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Go him. My tummy hurts.
Have you watched The Pit at all?
No.
What a fun show.
That's the 24 hours in the emergency room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They,
it's a whole shift in an emergency room. It's great.
I heard a rumor that they were trying to do a reboot of ER.
I think that's correct.
And they wouldn't sign off on it.
So they're like, all right, we'll just get that actor.
We'll just do 24 with one of the guys from ER. Yeah.
It's a great show, but it gives you some empathy for like the wait times and like how like hard the doctors are working in there trying to see everybody.
People are coming in.
People are fucked up.
And they're going, help. And you
please.
Go, I understand help.
Yeah, yeah.
You're number seven.
Mm-hmm.
When we get through the six in front of you for very good reason, we'll get to you.
We will get to you.
Yeah. I think people lost touch with that idea of like in the age of instant everything, mm-hmm. in the age of like, you're the star, fucking, this is your, you're yeah. the main character. You're not. We're in a big society that relies on other, on people like, sometimes other people take priority and that's okay.
Yeah.
I think a hospital is where you go like,
I'm going to chill the fuck out.
Chill the fuck out.
Let me just sit the fuck
maybe
out.
Maybe you got an ear out. Infection. I understand it hurts. Chill a little bit.
Yeah.
Because then you see that real shit. I'd go to Bellevue and I'd be like, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'd be waiting for like 3 hours and they'd be like, you? And I'd be like, get this guy. Speaking a language I don't know. Yeah, going yeah. like, oh, so long. I was like grabbing his stomach and you're like, this guy's in so much pain. It was wild. That was like one of the ones where I was like, man, our health insurance is sure as broken.
Yeah.
Our healthcare system really is
shattered. That is one of the messages of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, boy, is this system very flawed and fucked up.
Fucked up.
Very fucked up.
And then all the insurance guys, when that guy got shot, they went, hey, don't put our faces out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, that was the funniest reaction of Luigi, was all the CEOs of other insurance companies going, whoa, 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 guys, this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
This is a really bad idea. And everyone's like, I think it's a good idea. And they go, it's not, though. It's not. I don't know. It seems like crazy to me that we have all the technology, but you just can't see a doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp. Guess who just came fresh from therapy, so he's feeling real connected. No, I genuinely do love, I am coming from therapy and I had a good session today. And I think that's what therapy is. It's like going to the gym for your brain. You get a good workout, you feel better. And then, you know, then you go for the next one. It's all about consistency. It's hard to find a therapist. Yes. But when you find a therapist, it is very rewarding. And BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. And it's the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it gets an average rating out of 4.9 out of 5, which if you're a ratings guy like me, you go with it. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the United States. And BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. And then with their 12 years experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate, it means they typically get it right the first time. But if it isn't right, guess what? You could switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/soder. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/soder. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. 41 DUIs arrests made by one Tennessee state trooper. Jesus.
This is a guy that's not just letting you go home.
The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, which is just a guy. It's just a guy named like Lucky.
Yeah.
He goes, well, I watch the streets for my sober DUIs. 4 times higher than previously reported.
Wait, sober DUIs?
They're giving people who are sober DUIs.
How?
The county threw out 41 DUIs arrests made by former Tennessee State Trooper Asa Pearl between 2021 and 2024, with 22 of those cases involving drivers who were later shown not to have blood alcohol content levels above the legal limit. In 14 of the 22 cases, the drivers had some alcohol in their systems at the time of their arrest, but in at least 8 cases, the drivers arrested tested negative for both drugs and alcohol. The other 19 DUI cases were reportedly dropped for other reasons, including Pearl being unavailable for court. Isn't that the thing they always say when you get a speeding ticket?
Yeah,
you'll go to court. The cop will never show up.
Yeah, yeah. Always.
If I were a cop, I would show up to everyone.
I went to court for the DUI. He showed up.
He did?
He was there. Also, the lawyer was like, if you want to, I got a lawyer because I had run from the police. I had done a lot. I was I should go to jail. They were like, usually a DUI gets knocked down to like a reckless driving. You try to do that with a lawyer. The lawyer's like, we're going to knock this down to a DUI.
That's really funny.
That's what we're going to do.
She's like, I can't even get you DWI.
Nobody.
She goes, you went up on a curb.
Yeah, you're in lucky front of you're them. Getting a DUI. And he was like, if you want to come to court early, I'd done all this stuff preemptively. I'd done all this, community service and all the stuff before I even went to court. Because the lawyer's like,
hoping you're going to go in and the judge is going to be like, you're a good kid.
You're a good guy. Get out of here. He goes, if you want to see the video, you come early. And I was like, I don't want to see the video because I'm very ashamed.
Even as a comic?
It's going to live in my head. It's going to live in my head. I'm going to be very ashamed. Yeah. And sure enough, I walk to court. I'm not too early, but I get there and the lawyer's watching it like he's watching like an episode of Jackass. He's like, oh, I watch him. He's watching it. He's like, he can't sit still. He's moving. He like walks from one side of the court to the other to the cop. He's like, you remember the part, Woody? Oh my God.
Oh no. You had such a fuck up.
And I was like, watch it. I was like, no. And then he came out and he goes, I'm gonna be honest with you, man. Worst DUI video I've ever seen. I've seen a lot. That's the worst I've ever seen. And I was like, oh my God.
Was there any moment of pride in that? Was there any moment where you're like, if you're going to fail, fail spectacularly? Where you're like, yeah, that's right, bitch, you're going to remember me.
I mean, I definitely like tell the story of him like watching it. So watching funny. It like a black dude watches magic.
Oh,
just
shit.
Just like, oh,
walking
just like
away.
Running. Yeah, just like sprinting
half
through the
terrified,
room.
Half terrified. Half like, needs to watch believe. The end of it.
Dude, it was, I mean, it was nuts.
That's crazy. You yeah. never want your lawyer going, that's the worst one I've ever seen in my
dude,
life.
Dude, and he was, before that, he was comforting me. I was very ashamed when I first met with him. I was like, I can't believe I did this. And everybody kept saying this. He said this, my dad said this. He's like, everybody gets one, man. This is your one. You just hold it. And he goes, now, I'm about to drive to Alpharetta because the fella I went to high school with has been boning this 16-year-old. So keep it all in perspective, buddy.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. And then I found out afterwards, they let me back into the bar, and the manager that had banned me from that bar was like, your lawyer that you hired comes in here every lunch period and runs. He has a 2-martini lunch every lunch. He's a fucking lush.
Which means that's how bad your video was.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's not even a guy that doesn't understand alcohol no. culture.
This
it's a guy that goes,
it.
Holy shit. I'm drunk right now.
I didn't drink for a year after that. That was like when I was like, I'm gonna take a year.
What brought you back after a year?
I got a girlfriend and it was stressing me out.
And you're just like, I need a...
I was like, I would go
like
back to
that's like a country
this.
Song.
I got a
it really is like a country song where you're like, I got me a woman and she's driving me to drink.
That's what it was, dude.
I'm trying to think every time I slipped, it was always like an inconvenience that made me upset.
Like what?
Airports.
Delayed flight. Delayed I mean, flight. That's, I mean, if you're going to drink, it's an airport.
Airport
the
bars
rules are out the fucking window. It doesn't
honestly,
matter what time it is.
I said I miss day drinking.
You miss airport
I miss
day
airport
drink.
Drinking.
Yes.
I miss
flight drinking. Ooh.
I miss getting drunk enough that I'm willing to leave and come back through security just smoke a cigarette.
That's
St. Louis
sick.
Airport. I was flying Chicago, St. Louis back to New York. This is like when I had to buy like flights with six
yeah.
layovers to afford them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was I was coming home from Lollapalooza.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Lollapalooza and this was like 2011, 2012. And I get to the St. Louis airport, and our flight gets delayed. And I just went to the bar, started drinking, and I was like, what's your security like here? And they're like, it's not that bad. And I was like, I remember exactly which part of the parking garage I went to in the St. Louis airport, smoked like 2 or 3 cigarettes, came back through, was late, was the last person to board the flight, and came on smelling like cigarettes and whiskey, and wanted to talk to everybody. And I went like, sorry to keep you guys waiting, thinking it would kill, and no one was having it.
Done that. I remember there was like a flight where they're like, we had all boarded, and then they're like, hey, we're actually not going to be able to take off for a couple hours or like an hour if you guys want to get off for a little bit. I was like, sure enough, get off, crush a few whiskeys, get back on right before they're about to take off, like, woo-wee.
Dude, you come in hot.
I ended up kissing the lady next to me in my seat. Consensually, we had. I was like, I was firing.
Drunkenly made out with a woman on a plane.
I was firing on all cylinders. I had a charm I'd never had, and
you guys made out.
We made out.
Did you guys hang out after that?
No, no. She wanted to, and I was like, that was just for the. That was
that
on
was
the flight.
Sky kiss.
That was a sky kiss, baby.
You get a cloud kissy.
First and only time it's ever happened.
Kiss me in the clouds.
Kiss me in the clouds, baby.
Now leave me alone.
She was like, oh, I'd never do this.
This dick ain't. This dick isn't yours on the ground, only in the sky. Yeah, I have. You don't realize how annoying you are when you get on a plane drunk.
No.
You think
everybody loves
you. You think it's a sitcom.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm the neighbor that gets the cheer. When I used to go visit my mom for Christmas, when I was like, you know, still waiting tables and drinking here, I wanted to smoke a cigarette. And the only place you could smoke a cigarette in DIA was this like bar on the second level of the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'll go up there. I had like an hour till my flight. I was like, I'll go up there, smoke a cigarette, get a burger, fucking go to the thing, whatever. Sit down at the bar, couple Jamesons, couple fat tires. Turns out Ravens Steelers was kicking off. I was flying home on a Sunday. So I go, fucking Ravens Steelers. I'm smoking cigarettes. I don't want to leave.
Yeah.
This is everything I need. I don't look at my fucking phone. And then I'm like, oh, it's 15 minutes past boarding.
Yeah.
And I get drunkenly on the plane and want to talk to everybody about Steelers Ravens. No one cares. I'm like, you guys watching this Ravens Steelers game? And they're like,
yeah.
Buddy, get to your seat. I'm like buckling in and being like, Flacco looks pretty good. Flacco looks like he had Antoine Smith on a slant.
And you're like, a big man. You're a presence. You're getting on late. Somebody thought they had an open seat.
And I'm booming.
Your big ass is burling down.
And I go, I'm really sorry about this. I really enjoy watching Ray Lewis play the position of linebacker. And they're like,
oh, I don't think he did what they said he did.
Two people? He could kill one guy, but not two. Yeah, it was... Airport drinking is in your head the greatest, and for everyone else, a huge problem.
Huge.
Because now when I'm traveling and I see people black out in an airport, I'm like, oh, brother, I get it. Stay the fuck away from me.
Don't bring that shit over here.
But I do get jealous when I see a two-thirds empty beer at a bar at an airport. You make the best of friends. You made out with a girl.
I made out with a girl.
That is crazy.
It is crazy. It only happened the one time. I've never talked about it. I'm kind of I'm bragging. I don't know.
You know what's funny is sometimes, you know, I don't know about you, but self-admittedly, I don't think I ever had a lot of game.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I went to Florida with my friends and I got blacked out at the pool and I ended up going on a date with one of the waitresses that worked there.
Yeah.
Don't remember it.
Yeah.
They're like, do you remember going on a date last night? And I went, no. They're like, yeah, you like took a girl from the restaurant. You guys went to the beach and got dinner. I was like, I don't even remember that.
You got out of your own way.
Yeah, I got out of my own way. It was just like, whatever, what do you want?
I've heard you had game. I heard you getting around.
That I got around? No, I think it was comics. We're all carnies, so you spend time around each other and then it happens.
Yeah.
But real world game, zero.
Yeah, that's real. The game is different if it's like you just got off stage.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, how about that?
Patrice used to call it the yellow sun. He's like, it's like Superman and the yellow sun. It gives us powers, stage, but the farther you get away from it, the less power you have.
It's true, and you feel like a weak little bitch.
Oh, my God.
Why would anybody ever touch me?
Oh, my God, dude. I'd go to, like, regular shit.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like, 2010, and I'd meet people, and they'd be like, I don't know. And you're like, well, then I'll go get drunk. Because that's what it was, bars or comedy clubs.
The idea of going to, like, a club, like a dance club, never. Terrifying to me.
Dude.
Terrifying.
So that trip to Florida, the same trip to Florida, it was in Miami, and we were all going because one of my friends was turning 30.
The idea of Miami is scary to me.
I hate Miami. But I was still drinking, and I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's go to Miami. And we go down to Miami. We're in South Beach. We go to the Fontainebleau. Or like Fontainebleau, I forget what it is. It's like a nice club.
Uh-huh.
My friends want to go to the club. My friend whose birthday it is, the guys I grew up with. They wait in line to get into the club.
Yeah.
And then the club's like six dudes. No, it was seven of us. He goes, I can let five of you in. And me and my buddy went.
The math thing.
Me and my buddy went, you want to go drink at the bar? Yeah. And he went, yeah. And we went and drank at the fucking lobby bar of the, and it was more fun.
Yeah.
My friends went to the club and they're like, it sucked. It cost this. I was like, oh, we got blacked out.
I don't think I've ever been to a club. I've never done the thing where I like waited in line for some. I remember I picked.
People love club culture.
I know. I went and met a girl at a club. I was like meeting her outside. She was coming out. We had already gone on a couple dates. And
oh, okay.
I had my fucking backpack. I'm always walking around with my backpack because I need my notebooks. Because I need my notebooks for my jokes.
I just got over that.
Dude,
I'm about to be 43. I got over that 3 years ago.
I'm out of there. I'm outside of there with my dumb little backpack. And there's a guy, this fucking piece of shit, just like with this big dumb mustache and a fur coat. And he controls the list. And I'm watching him. And he's just relishing, like looking at people and being like, nope.
Those guys love it.
And then I'll look at somebody and he'll go, in a lift the velvet rope, and I'm like, this piece of shit. I would never stand here and let this fucker pass judgment on me.
Oh, but trying to go center field some pussy outside of a club that you know, and you're like with your glove.
Yo, I felt cool. I was like, hey, I'm not going in there for that.
When she comes out, though, it's like being at an airport when someone lands on a flight. You go, over here. You have a sign. Let's get out of here. Alyssa, I hope we fuck tonight. Dude, that's what I mean. I had no game. If you took me outside of the comedy scene or waiting tables because of the coworker game.
Yes.
I either had coworker game or I had you saw me perform. Everything else besides that.
But I think this is normal. This is like most guys. Most guys have their sphere of, what is it, aptitude? Sphere of knowledge. And that's where you
strike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, there's guys that are like good at going to clubs. I'm friends with some of them. They're like good at going to clubs and buying a drink and going up and being like, they're good at having this conversation. What do you do? Oh, yeah, that's really, they can do that. Yeah. I can't do that
at all. Can't do it.
Can't even imagine. Blah, 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 blah. They're like, now you put me at a diner, you're in trouble. you put me, a friend, and two ladies at a diner, I'm running that shit.
Yeah.
I'm running that shit.
That's where you come alive.
Club zero. Arizona, I did horrible at when I was in college.
Really?
Because I did not have bar or club energy.
Terrible.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Cal State University, Northridge.
Oh, hell yeah. So you're like Northern California.
No,
where's Northridge?
No, it's a suburb of Los Angeles. It's Northridge. It's where the big earthquake happened.
Oh, shit.
It's
that's what I was thinking.
San Fernando Valley.
So you went Cal State. How did you
end up? I went to Cal State Northridge.
Out there.
Because my parents were supportive. I was like, I'm going to do film production stuff. I had gone to this like arts high school in Atlanta. I got into like film. I was like, I'm going to film stuff. And I didn't get into any. I didn't get it. The film schools were like USC, UCLA, Chapman, NYU.
None of them.
Emerson. None of them. I got waitlisted to Emerson. Oh. And I remember my mom looked up Cal State Northridge because she'd heard like people that work in the industry go to Cal State Northridge. And she was
That's
a good mom. She knew.
She know in the shorthand.
Yeah. She knew what I was capable of. And I remember she looked at the school and she got excited. She was like, you can get in here. You can get in here.
God, me and you have the same level of dumbassery where our moms knew where we could get in.
Yeah.
Because like I applied to CU and they were like, wait list. And CSU was like, maybe. And then my mom was like, try out of state. And I went to Arizona and Arizona was like,
try out of state.
And then write a letter about how your dad died. And I wrote a letter and Arizona was like, okay. And then I was like, man, I got into Arizona. Truth is no one in Colorado wanted me.
Yeah. I got into Florida State.
Oh.
But I didn't get into the film production program, which is probably good. If I had gone to Florida State, I would have been a totally different guy.
You'd be dead.
I would have died.
There's certain schools that I think about if I would have gone to, I would have been dead.
Yeah.
University of Indiana.
Why?
It's a party school.
Yeah.
I had friends that went to Bloomington and they're like, it's a fucking drinking school.
Yeah,
it does not get enough credit.
Yeah.
So if you're a Hoosier, congratulations on the national title in football, but also you deserve more credit as a party school.
Yeah.
Because the people that I used to party with and drink with that went to Indiana were like fucking pros. Indiana, I went to Arizona and everyone's like, Arizona's a party school.
They talk about it like it's the biggest party school in the country.
Arizona State is.
Oh, right.
Arizona, if you're a rich kid and you're in a frat, you're going to have the best time in the world.
Yeah.
If you're a rich kid and your dad's just going to give you endless amounts of money, go to Arizona.
Yeah.
Join a frat. You'll do good cocaine. You'll hang out with beautiful women tan and bleach blonde. If you just are a low-life piece of shit and you want a party, go to Arizona State. You can get in, and every night there's a party. We'd drive up from Tucson to Tempe and be like, I talked to Santino about this all the time because Santino went to ASU.
Yeah.
I was like, you went to the party school. We'd go up there, and you'd be like, you'd see pool parties at an apartment complex on a Wednesday that you're like, this is like an Entourage episode. It's like crazy. Yo. Like the women there, and also Arizona State, they're dumbasses. Mm-hmm. You just need to go Wildcats. I'm always going to be a Wildcat. 2.5 GPA to get into fucking Arizona State.
Yeah.
So that was always the knock, was that we had the slightly uglier, smarter women.
Yeah.
And they just had the greatest party school of all time.
Yeah.
Arizona State, it's like, it's bonkers. I don't know if it's still like that, but at the turn of the century, back when I was there, 01 to 05, Arizona State.
I mean, when I was coming up, there was still people still talked about Arizona State.
Dude, they were like
the list would come out like
the Playboy list. Playboy would do
Arizona State,
and people at Arizona would always go like, "Yeah, Arizona's up there," and you go, "Motherfucker, I've been to Tempe. We're not touching that."
Yeah,
maybe they are in the frats, but not in regular, not dude, the Gen Pop.
I tried the Gen Pop. Yeah. I love throwing Gen Pop.
I was Gen Pop, dude. I was just a regular.
I tried the frat thing.
You did.
I did.
You rushed.
I rushed, but I didn't plan to. There was just this group of guys that were like, "You should join," and I was like, "Oh, yeah, okay."
They recruit.
I realized we were like the Bad News Bears fraternity. Oh. We were like, "Yo, ZBT, those are still my dogs."
That was the Jewish frat.
Yeah, we weren't Jewish. It was a Jewish frat. Yes, but we were not. We were not super Jewish.
My roommate at the time, who was a drug dealer and Israeli, moved weight through ZBT.
Yo.
Oh, those Hebes connected, and they were fucking chronic.
We were like a very Mexican friend.
That's great. The Jewish
friend. Cal State Northridge, dude.
Them showing up and being like, "There's the ZBT. I want to see my brothers." And then they're like, "Hola.
Oh, orale.
Oh, hey, what's up, Holmes?" We're of a different tribe. No. We come from a different, I did not that one for of a little the 12, bit. Bro.
And then I quit, but I did it. I tried it because I was like, maybe this will help me get women. And it just instilled a lot of really terrible drinking habits.
Did you? Yeah, because that rush process.
But dude, it was like no, women weren't coming to the frat either. Like our, see, I watched it was like bad.
The people at Arizona in my freshman dorms that rushed, a lot of them got laid, and I was like, immediately saw the benefit.
Yeah.
And I was like, just in jean shorts in my room drinking fucking Milwaukee's Best and smoking cigarettes. Straight up, dude. Shout out Apache Santa Cruz, yeah, the dorms. Yeah. I would just be chilling outside smoking cigarettes, and then my friend Morgan would come with a girl, and he'd be like, "Yeah, we met at this Theta SAE social," and I'd be like, "Cool, cool, cool. You guys want to smoke resin and play Madden 02?
This is what I was about. It's like there were dudes you could smoke weed with and drink with. It was like they would do these events, and I'd be like, "I can't, I'm not built for this."
Yeah, where I started really resenting it at Arizona was once they got into the frats, they were like, "You can't come to our parties." And what I liked about the University of Colorado when I lived in Denver was when we would go visit our friend's older brother who went to CU, you could get into frat parties.
Yeah.
Just pay $5 for a keg cup, and you were in. She had a red cup, and then you were drinking, and it was like, it literally reminded me of the movies where it's like a house party and you're like, "Oh, excuse me." And everyone's drinking and they're like, "Who are you?" And you're like, "I live in this dorm." And they're like, "Fine." Arizona was like dickheads.
Yeah.
Like they were fucking mean.
They were gatekeeping the whole thing.
And you were like, "I don't." My roommate one time, our junior year, went to go sell a quarter pound to one of the frats, which will remain nameless. If you see me live, I'll tell you who it was. He was selling a quarter pound to a guy. Fucking 4 ounces.
Yeah.
He's like going to sell this guy. And this is like, they want the weed. He had really good weed. And I'm like chilling with him. Yeah. I was always the weed dealer's roommate.
Yeah.
That was always what I was. And I'm like just chilling there. And this guy's like, "Who the fuck are you?" And I was like, "Oh, my roommate's," I didn't want to say anything. So I go, "My roommate's doing business with so-and-so." And the guy, I remember this fucking clear as day. The guy goes, "Cool, cool. You got 3 minutes to get out of this house or I'm going to kick the shit out of you." And I go, "I don't think that's a good idea for you." Not saying I was a badass, just because I knew. And he was like, "No, fuck that. You got 3 minutes or I'm going to kick shit out of you." And there was they were in the bedroom.
Did he seem capable?
Yeah. They would have kicked shit out of me. They're all very good shape.
Yeah.
Probably steroids.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have beat the fucking brakes off me.
I fucking hate this.
I would have bit one of them.
Yeah.
I would have scratched one of their eyes out.
I'm a little guy. You're a big guy. I always figure, hey, you're a big fella out
in
the world.
I'm a big guy that gouges. I like to gouge eyes. Those
long fingers.
Yeah, I got piano fingers, bitch. I'll fucking press your point.
Play your eyes like a goddamn sonata.
But I remember knocking on the door being like, "Amir." And he was like in the room. And I was like, "Amir." And the guy's like, "I don't know who you're knocking for." And you know, like when doors would open at fraternity houses and you'd see into the room, like you saw their personality.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like the kid that sold weed at the frat. And I remember opening the door and being like, "Hey, this kid's saying he's going to kick shit out of me if I don't leave in 3 minutes." And they like I got double mad at. So this guy's mad at me because I'm at the frat. And then I opened the door and they're in the middle of a fucking over $1,000 weed deal.
Yeah.
And I go, "Guys, I'm being yelled at." And then they're like, "Shut the fucking door." And I'm like, and I just left and went out front and smoked a cigarette on the sidewalk.
Motherfucker.
And then Amir like comes out. This is before cell phones.
Yeah.
It's before texting.
Yeah.
So he just comes outside and he's like, where were you? And I was like, I tried to tell you. I got kicked out. But dude, that guy made me just like, I was so mad.
I know. I've never.
I was like, fuck you, dude. I don't even want to be here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here. I don't like your frat.
I've remembered every slight like that in my life.
All the time.
All the time.
It made me genuinely dislike the University of Arizona because there were so many guys that were like that.
Yeah.
They're like, what are you doing? You're like, nothing, man. I just want to get high.
Where the fuck are they now?
They act like they're your friends. There's some guys, all my friends from Arizona, I still like, if they reach out, I'll be like, what's up, dude?
Yeah.
But there's been guys that I genuinely hated in college that I remember.
Yeah.
That someone else will go, oh, I was talking to so-and-so and he remembers you. And I go, keep my name out of that motherfucker's mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't like it. Because now that you're public, now that you're in the public, you know, you're on a fucking Fox TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure there's people that reach out to you that you're like, leave me the fuck alone.
Some.
Yeah.
Not a ton.
Not a ton.
Which is good.
And by the way, I didn't have like a lot of enemies in Arizona, but there's a couple dildos I remember that I'm like, we're not friends.
I know.
Fucking, you were never friends with me.
Yeah.
You didn't come to my fucking house and take bong loads and play PlayStation 2 with me.
Think about comeuppance for them. What would that look like?
You know what it is? A lot of the times what you don't realize is when you're young and you're going through something like that, you don't realize that you're in a bad position, but these people are in the best they're ever going to do position. So just wait.
Yeah.
It's like being mad at the internet. Just wait a little bit and it'll change.
Yeah.
Like, don't comment back. That's what I say to comics all the time. Don't comment back when someone talks shit. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Just give it a little and then you won't care.
Yeah. That's genuinely very true.
Same advice to college students. If someone's being a to you, have it fuel you and then wait.
Use that fuel. That's kind of been, I mean, it's worked for me thus far. That's kind of been the game plan. I remember in so many situations just being the bottom of the totem pole and being like, you know what? Fuck you, motherfuckers. You know what?
And I don't think enough people talk about that because they go like, no, you got to be above it and do that. And you go, fuck that shit. Have it fucking motivate you.
Especially when you're young.
Do you know how many times, and I say this for guys that are lonely right now that are in their 20s and you're like, I can't meet a woman that's into the things I'm into. Stay yourself. Don't change for these bitches because you will find someone that likes what you like.
Yes.
It took me forever. But I kept in college, I always had girls that I had crushes on.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I like you like a friend.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, I suck. And you think you suck. And you go, I just think you like the wrong people.
Yeah.
You're liking women that you wouldn't like if you dated anyways.
Yeah.
Because they're into different stuff. They want to go to the farmer's market. They want to go hiking and all this shit. And you don't want to do that. And you go, well, I got to do that to get a woman. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to look for what you want in a woman. Because when I met Katie, I was like, oh, I was wrong my whole life.
Yeah.
Who I was going after, I always thought like, oh, well, oh, a girl like Katie wouldn't like me or whatever. It's like, we have the same interests.
Mm-hmm.
We like the same shit. Just find someone that you're into that shares the same stuff and then hope they like you back.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
But I was going after like hot blonde girls in Arizona that were like, no. They're like, this guy has a Range Rover and wants to fuck me. I'm like, I got a Dodge Stratus and you can come hang out with me while I do the overnight at KFMA. And they're like, no.
Overnight at KFMA?
I used to be an overnight DJ. So,
oh, that's sick.
I didn't like Arizona. I wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And then I was going to transfer. And my mom gave me this speech where she was like, she didn't even really give me a speech. She goes, I don't know. I just didn't really think I raised you to be a quitter like that. And I was like,
damn.
Because she was right. It was my freshman year and I wasn't having fun because I was doing the same thing. I was going to try to hang out with people that weren't like me.
Yeah.
I was trying to go to these parties with people that weren't rich kids from fucking San Diego.
Yeah.
That had money. They weren't like me. They didn't understand. And I didn't like them. And so I was like, oh, fuck. And then I got a job. I started doing college radio, and I started working at the radio station in Tucson, and I met all my dogs.
Yeah.
I met everybody, and that gave me the confidence to start doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And then I just was at Laughs. I was either at KFMA or Laughs.
Yeah.
All the time. And people were like, Arizona, it's like, well, I paid for my whole school, so I will support that team.
Yeah.
Especially this March. Let's go Wildcats. But I'm never going to do the thing where it's like, it was the greatest time of my life. It wasn't.
No.
It set me up for the greatest time of my life, which was moving here and doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
which was like, oh, this is like, I think how a lot of people feel when they go to college is how I felt when I moved to New York with stand up.
Yeah.
Where I went, oh, you're like me. So I don't fault people that have a good time in college. Yeah. You may be finding people that are like minded like you. Like there are guys that join frats and they go like, this is what I wanted. Shirtless arms over each other going, we're brothers. Yo. And they need that.
Yeah.
And now they're in the corporate world and they go like, do you remember when I was getting my dick sucked at fucking Boise State?
Yeah,
and you're
like,
I'm glad you had that.
Yeah.
Delayed gratification.
Yes.
You're not having it in college. It's just delayed gratification. You'll find it.
Absolutely. But you got to keep working.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like that's what sucks about the instant culture.
Yeah.
Because everyone goes, you should be happy right now. It's because, no, you shouldn't.
No.
You should actually be a little miserable.
Especially in your 20s, man. You're trying to piece it together. It's like painful. It's fucking painful.
Enjoy your skin being tight.
Yeah.
Enjoy being able to sleep wherever you can without your neck hurting. I could sleep 9 hours uninterrupted on a couch.
Oh, man.
And maybe flip once.
I was living on couches.
Yeah, I lived on a couch.
Genuinely.
When I moved out to Hoboken to do stand-up, I lived on a fucking futon.
You were in Hoboken on a futon?
For 7 months.
God damn.
And shout out to Morgan and Norberto and Jimmy Balls, my roommates. They let me live on the fucking futon. We could smoke cigarettes inside, which was...
Oh, I've dropped out of school for a year and I... Part of the time I lived in a hostel. I lived and worked in a hostel on Venice fucking beach. And we could smoke cigarettes everywhere.
Changes.
And it
everything.
Was, I was 21 years old. I didn't have any money and I would clean rooms at night to sleep there and just crush Marlboro Reds.
Yes.
What a
cowboy
time.
Killers.
What
did you find in those rooms?
What did I find? Nothing crazy.
Cause a hostel, you think probably cause Eli Roth.
I met interesting people. For sure. You meet so many cool people.
Yeah, people that travel.
People that travel.
It's like meeting with someone like Ari Shaffir who goes, oh, I just go there and I live there for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I never had that kind of confidence.
So many crazy people. It was awesome. But that was, man, the smoking cigarettes inside.
Dude, when I used to wake up, when I lived with them, and I would just swing my feet over the futon and pull my pack of Camel Lights.
Yeah.
Pull one out and be like, the fuck we got going on today? Light it out the side. You're like, turn on the TV and watch Sports Center and be like, hungover.
Yeah.
Definitely hungover from the night before. Just being like, fuck. Dude, those guys, I saw Morgan for like the first time in years. And he always would be like, he'd call me gay because of how much I liked stand up. Because we were college friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved out here and he'd be like, you're so gay for comedy. Because I'd be like, oh, because I, rest in peace to Shaq. The old bouncer at the Cellar, but Big Jay introduced me to him.
Yeah.
When I first moved here and I became friends with like Lewis and Jay and all them. And Jay was like, oh, you should know Shaq. And I wasn't in at the Cellar.
Yeah.
But Shaq was like, yeah, dude, I'll let you sit on the runners and watch the shows. And I'd watch like Geraldo and fucking Patrice. Patrice wasn't in he had already been kicked out of the Cellar. So it was Geraldo, Mike DiStefano, Attell, but I just like Todd Lynn. I'd just come and watch him. And I would like, I was obsessed with it. And then I'd just go get drunk at like a shitty bar and like whoever I was with comedy-wise, we just talk about the sets we watched. And then I'd just come home blacked out. But Morgan would always be like, dude, it's so gay. You just follow other men around to watch. And I go, no, I want to do this. And I haven't seen him in like 12 years.
Yeah.
And then we got dinner in the city and he's like, I can't believe you're like, you're a comic now. And you're like, I know, I was so gay for it that I became it. But that's what I think is like a lot, what's missed now with the culture of like instant celebrity and YouTube fame and that shit. Go get into something.
Yeah.
And go get so into it that you like live it.
Yeah.
Like give yourself to it.
Yeah.
I think that's missed on a lot of shit. Like what you're talking about with film. Yeah. I think that's a great idea. What your mom did was awesome.
Yeah.
She's like, this is LA. This is where they make film. I mean, now Atlanta, but
I know.
You, the place you left became the fucking LA. But like her having the idea of like Northridge, Cal State. Northridge. You can just be right there in LA in the valley and or wherever it is and then fucking make.
And all my boys I went to school with there, they all work in the industry.
That's what
They're all doing fucking great. They all work in the industry.
Having that parent that can do that. Yeah. My mom was like, listen, she worked for an insurance company. She's like, I cover 5 states. You can go to college in one of those 5 states. Because I need to know I could touch down and call a lawyer if you need help. And I was like, great piece of advice.
Yeah.
And I was like, Arizona? She's like, yeah. And I was like, all right, I'll go to Arizona.
Fuck yeah.
Texas, Arizona, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, or one other one. And I was like, I'll go to
Utah?
Arizona. Yeah. It was that was her territory.
Dude, yeah.
And so she would travel all the time, and then she was like, you can go to one of those, but you're like, fuck yeah.
That's wide open country, brother.
But that's what it is. You got to go somewhere that makes sense. Take shots you can make.
Yeah.
People don't do that.
It's true.
People go like, I want to be famous. You see that in stand-up all the time. They go, I remember barking in the West Village, and I met this guy named Scott. I hope he's all right. But I remember meeting him, and he went, yeah, dude, I'm going to get in 2 weeks here. Then I'm going to try to get into the cellar. He's like, within a year, I'm going to be on SNL. And I was like, oh, brother.
So many delusional people like
oh,
this.
Oh, brother.
Because I really started hitting it in L.A., which is even more.
You started in L.A.?
Because I was out there for school.
I didn't know that's where you started stand-up.
No, I technically started as a kid. I started as a kid in Atlanta. My mom got me into stand-up as a kid.
I didn't realize. How old were you?
Dude, I was like, I went to a summer camp for comedy called Kid Comedy when I was like 12. And where they just teach you like Abbott and Costello bits. They teach you like who's on first.
That's great though. That's like basic structure.
It's amazing. And then my mom was so in tune with what I was good at. And she was like, all right, we'll try this. And then that lady had a class and she would like write jokes for you. And it would be like, last week I got a 70, my highest grade ever on a spelling test. I know. I've got to start cheating off smarter kids. She would write you shit like that.
That's fun.
And then your graduation, our graduation was at the Punchline in Atlanta.
Next to the diner.
And she got fucking Dom Herrera to come out because Dom Herrera's like niece was in the program. So it was similar to like what Tiffany Haddish did when she was a kid at the...
Laugh Factory.
At the Laugh Factory. It was like, it was one of them's, but in Atlanta. It didn't last that long. Janet Schultz, she's still my dog. So I did that. And then I got into like, you know.
So when you're doing it in LA, when you're at Northridge, are you like, let me go do stand up?
Dude, I was like, I had done it a couple times because another kid in the dorm was interested in stand up. He was really good. This guy, Dylan Niles, he was really into like one liners. He was great. He was a very smart dude. And I was like, I used to do this shit. And I would just get hammered and stuff.
Old hat.
Yeah. It just sucked. But then I remember I was trying to do homework one day. It was like physics of music, some bullshit class that they give to dummies where you have to have a math. And they're like, how about the physics of music? And I was even bad at that. And I was like, fuck this. I'm going to try doing stand-up again. I went to the Ha Ha Cafe. I took the bus. I was like 20. And I was like, I did that. And I was like, I'm going to drop out and just do stand-up. And
really?
That's what I did. I dropped out. And I just
was your mom mad when you dropped out?
Nah, supportive.
Really?
Supportive.
That's, you know what's crazy, man, is like... you do comedy long enough that you realize how lucky we are to have supportive
parents. But I'm a little jealous of people that didn't have parents that were supportive or sort of did it on their own, because I sometimes think there's a weakness to me and a strength to them that they like through it all were like, no, I actually think this is going to work.
See that. I understand. Like, I wonder what I
would have. Yeah, I wonder what I would have done if I didn't have people behind me being like, you could do this.
I understand that. That's like, that. There is something about that where you're like, oh, I admire that you were like, everyone was like, you fucking suck. And you're like, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just go, I know. Dude. I fucking suck.
Let me hang it up, dude.
I suck. I fucking stink. I remember like telling my mom, like, I'm doing stand up. And my mom was like, great. And then I was like, I think this is, because I was doing it at the University of Arizona.
Yeah.
I was doing like open mics every Thursday. Doing like MC weekends.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And then like going to Albuquerque and doing like laughs out there, like cool. As an MC, and then like the casino gigs. And finally I was like, I think I'm gonna do stand up. And my mom went, listen, I just need you to get your college degree. She's like, that truly is, as a single mom, the mm-hmm. only thing I care about. I feel like if you got your degree, it says I did my job.
Yeah.
And I was like, fair. And then she's like, but after that, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
So then I graduated college and I was like, hey, I'm going to do a year of stand-up and working at KFMA here. Then I'm going to move to New York. And my mom, without even batting an eye, went, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it. Go do that shit. And you were like, that's where I feel lucky.
Yeah.
That's where I think it's a strength where other people had. Because I think a lot of guys get stopped that don't have the like, fuck you, I am funny. And their parents go, fuck no, you're not. And you go, yeah, you're right.
You're right. How many people are actually limited?
Because me and you might have been crushed by that.
Yeah. And I did it. My mom wanted the same thing. I dropped out for a year and I did stand up. Towards the end, I wasn't doing so. I bombed so bad, I stopped for a few months.
Those early bombs.
Oh, my God. It was brutal.
Yeah.
This guy had booked me. It was when I was living in the hostel on Venice Beach. And I just talked to him at a bar. And he was like, there's this... this fucking reggae band that's playing, you should come and do stand-up in between them. And then he was like, it's the best reggae band in Venice Beach. They like, they were, and I did it, and I invited people from the hostel that I had just started working at. I got so drunk. I went up there, bombed my tits off, and the guy that had booked me, through the silence, looks at me and goes, I thought you were funny, man.
Oh.
Through the silence.
Oh.
I got off. I was so embarrassed. The people from the hostel had seen it. People I have to live and work with. But I'll never forget the drummer, like this cool, like blonde dude. I come out and I was like, I really goofed it. And he goes, hey, man, you know what they call that? Experience.
Hey. Yo, thanks, dude.
I go, thank you, dude.
He goes, I'm going to be dead in 2 years. Yeah. Some thing about me,
he fucking,
I'm going
to
be gone.
I'll never forget soon. That motherfucker. But I stopped for like 3 months after that. And then I went back to school and just did stand up on the side and got my degree.
That's what you do.
Stayed in LA for a year, drove for Uber, doing stand up. And then I was like, let me go back to Atlanta where it like, you just can get better faster.
I mean, it's a
be
great
from
scene.
Where I'm from. I didn't want to be like a comic from Los Angeles. I wanted to be from Atlanta.
That was always the thing I thought, because I was in Tucson, which is close to LA.
Yeah.
And I was like always obsessed with the New York guys. And I was like, no, I got to go to New York. And everyone that I did comedy with was like, LA is right here. No. And they're like, I know. And they're like, who do you know in New York? And I was like, nobody. I know. See, Morgan.
That's sick.
I know Morgan from school, and I called him. I still remember I was watching a Yankees-Tigers playoff game, and I was smoking resin on and out on my little balcony on my porch in Tucson, and I went, let me see if Morgan's living in New York. And I thought Hoboken was part of New York. That's how fucking stupid I was. And I called him and I went, where do you live? And he goes, I live in Hoboken. And I was like, I think I'm gonna move out there. And he was like, you can live on my couch.
What a guy.
And I was like, are you for real? And I just remember that because I was watching that playoff game and the Yankees were what reminded me of like, oh yeah, I could call Morgan. Yeah. He lives out there. And he let me fucking move out here. And then like January 6th, 2007, I fucking moved out to New York and had zero idea about this city. I had no idea where anything was.
That's fucking exciting.
This city is fucking terrifying when you move here.
I bet. And how old are you? Fucking 23?
22, 23?
Yeah.
And you just like move out here. And I literally took a gypsy cab from LaGuardia that ripped me off. Ripped me off. Just to take me to fucking Penn Station.
Yeah.
Ripped me off. Me and another fucking country bumpkin that landed at LaGuardia. And now I have like heat for gypsy cab guys. Dude, ask Sagala. We landed on Sunday, and the guy's like, you know, like, get away from me. You took $200 from me when I had nothing.
$200 is crazy.
I got fucking ripped off. I'm an idiot. And I was a country bumpkin. And they, good for them. That's how they survive. It's the law of the jungle. And they fucking got me.
Dude, I got one of those.
But I remember being like, dude, it's like when you go to a difficult level in a video game and it's not unlocked.
Yeah.
And you're just like doing small moves, and you're like, I don't even know where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
Moving into the city, I still missed that. Like taking the subway the wrong way.
Yeah.
And being like, fuck, I'm in Queens. I was supposed to go downtown. Like just not knowing where I was. It was so exciting to be a loser and then struggling.
Yeah.
Just struggling. That's where you got to find fun in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the booze really comes into play. The early years of New York.
Dude.
Just fumbling through open mics. Nothing better than get a little loose for that.
Drinking at a bar, telling people at the bar you're going to go do stand-up, and they go, well, you got more balls than I do. Yeah, dude, I used to love the shout-out stand-up New York's Sunday open mic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd do, like, just hitting the mics. There used to be a website called Giggle Chick where she would list every open mic in New York, and I had it in my fucking notebook. I had that notebook
in L.A. L.A. it was Bad Slava.
I remember that. Because the first time I went to L.A., they were like, oh, you look up Bad Slava, all the mics you can get on. Because L.A., I would probably been in New York 7 or 8 years before I tried to go out there and do a set, and L.A. was not having it.
Yeah. Fuck out. No, it was fine to come up. But, dude, I was doing like the Hot Cafe in this place called Marty's, which is just a guy who had an office space with 3 rooms in it. And people from L.A. back 10 years ago will tell you about Marty's. 3 rooms in it. And you would just give them $5 and you would go do stand up in the 3 rooms for other comics, one or two guys. And you were just running through your shit.
Dude, I mean, Monday nights barking for the Comedy Village in the West Village.
You did it. You barked.
Oh, yeah. I barked. And dude, at the time I was barking, List was hosting the Monday night show. So he didn't have to bark. He was hosting. But the Barking Crew was like me, Graham K., Andrew Schultz, Thomas Dale.
What? Like
a couple other people. We were all barking.
That's wild.
Yeah. And we'd all bark in the West Village.
I didn't bark. In L.A., what I did was I worked at the Ha Ha Cafe, these sketchy motherfuckers, and I would send a text blast. Text blast that was like, you just won 2 free tickets with comics from HBO.
Dude.
Showtime.
You know, call center.
And half of the text back would be like, take me off this fucking list. How many fucking... And I did that to do the open mic for free instead of paying $5.
So texts weren't prevalent when I was in Tucson in 04. Because I started in 04, 05, 06. I did Tucson 04 to 06. And Laughs, the comedy club, had a call room where open micers would go in there and then just blast their phone list being like, hey, coming up, we've got T.C. Hatter and Marcy Ann. Come check them out Friday, Saturday. And then they would get like, that was how they got into the club. And I my buddy Matt, a bunch of people I knew did that. And I was like, I can't do that.
I ran like a bringer.
Yeah, I used to make calls for a bringer show.
Really?
I have my old, in that notebook, Gary Veeder was on that. Gary Veeder was on the list where I'd call for this lady. This lady picked me up like at a bus stop. She didn't. It was at the Stand Up New York open mic. And she was like, hey, I need help. I'll give you a spot every Monday on this show that like Jim Norton would do, Geraldo, Patrice.
Fuck yeah.
The guys I idolized. And she was like, all you have to do is call these 10 people, get 10 people to bring 10 friends. And I didn't know what a bringer was. And then the second someone told me what that was, I was like, that's gross. And they're like, well, you're helping out. And I was like, oh no, I'm not joking. I think I started doing that. I moved here January, started doing that in February, was done by April.
God damn.
Being like, I don't want to do that. That's fucked up. And she was like, well, then you'll have to bark. And I was like, I'll bark. I'd much rather bark than fucking call people for bringer.
Yeah.
Oh, the dirty shit.
Dude, this system that they did, it would be like, they would ask somebody to do the Monday competition show and they'd be like, you give us $20. We give you 20 tickets and then you sell those tickets however you want. And I think I was so hard up for stage time. I never pressed anybody to sell tickets. I never was the one that like pushed people to sell tickets. I just ran the soundboard and I got to do my 10 minutes on the show.
God, I wonder who is this equivalent in the Epstein files. I didn't f***ing eat the kids. I didn't send any of the kids. You go, all I would do is make sure that there was shrimp on the island for Jeffrey and his
I feel
death.
Shame. I've never admitted to this.
This is like,
and you just told your story of how you were morally above it. And I was like, well.
No, dude, but here's the thing. Well. I was morally above it. But I kind of knew what I was doing was dirty. And then when it was, Joe List was the one that put it crystal clear to me.
Uh-huh.
He goes, you're helping book a bringer show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh. And he's like, you can't do that. And I was like, I got him.
Did you ever do a bringer show?
Yeah.
I did bringers.
I brought, shout out Caitlin Allgood. She's been married for a long time, but she was a high school friend.
Uh-huh.
And she was in the city working I forget where she was working. I think Hillstone. She's working at a restaurant. And I was like, you got to come see me. You got to come see me do stand up. And her boyfriend at the time came with my buddy Vic. And I remember the lady was mad at me because I was supposed to have 5 people and I brought 3. And she went, well, now you're going to go on late. And the show started at 8 p.m. I went up second to last in front of 5 people. 3 of them were mine. 2 of them were the guy that went last.
Jesus.
And the only reason I went second to last was because I had 3 and he had 2. And I remember going like, and I was so mad because the beginning of the show was packed and it was like Jim Norton specifically went up and I watched him and I was like obsessed with Opie and Anthony. I couldn't say anything. And he walked out and I was like, oh fuck. And then I went up at like, I was mad because I'd been co-featuring at Laughs with horseshit jokes.
But you were fucking featuring.
But I was like, dude, I was doing 20. Now I can't even get 3 minutes on this bringer show. I was so mad.
Yeah.
That's just what it was.
You moved to New York, you got to eat that shit.
But you know?
Absolutely. When I moved from Atlanta, I waited until I was like pretty, like I was good in the Atlanta scene. I was, you know, baby, I was working.
Then you come here and
I was good. And they were like, fuck you. And
that's the thing about New York that I'll tell any comic that's in another city. No, you should move to New York. Mm-hmm. It's good for stage time. But just know, no one gives a fuck.
Yeah. Also, the sooner
the
better.
No one gives a fuck who you were in your scene, what you did in your scene. I moved. I was one of the people that convinced Shane to move here. And he was over in Philly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember walking him to the stand and the stand going, I don't give a fuck. I remember him walking in the cellar and going, this guy's fucking hilarious. And they go, I don't give a fuck.
Dude, I remember when Shane, they were doing the auditions for This Week at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah, it was remember at the Fat Black.
At the Fat Black. And Shane did a set and didn't get it.
I talk about that with Liz all the time.
And I went up to
I him. Had to go to Liz yeah. and go, I fucking promise you, he's hilarious. And she was like, well, he didn't do well on his first. SD watched me, he didn't do well. And I was like, I swear to God, this guy is good.
The first time I saw him was, what the fuck was that place? I forget the name of it. It was upstairs. It was up a long flight of stairs.
Oh, on 44th Street?
No, down more closer to Union Square. Maybe off 14th.
Long stairs.
Long stairs. Sort of had, it had a curtain. It was a long, thin room. Anyway, it was the first place I saw Shane, and I was just hanging in the back, and it was so, he was so funny. It was the joke about, like, his sister being on heroin. And being
Yeah. He's like, it's great if you hand her a guitar, but she's just a nail tech, or she works at a hair salon.
Yeah.
You're talking about taking her to the amusement park?
Yeah.
It's great. It's on live.
It was great. And then I remember seeing that audition, because I did the same audition the next night, and I went the first night just to see, and I just walked in, and I was like, dude, you're so funny. And he's been so nice to me ever since then.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He's just so a good dude. But he was king shit in Philly.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you graduated. You beat the level. Come up to New York thinking like, this is going to be a layup.
No.
It's this is a fucking layup. And everyone was like, I don't give a
it's
fuck.
It's brutal.
And you're like, so just know if you're a comic and you're thinking about moving to New York, get over the idea of them being excited you're here.
Yeah.
You just have to be here, show up, do well. People will take notice.
I was doing mad open mics. I was just muscling through it. And then eventually something catches and you start to, you get an idea what the scene is. You make friends. And then
shout out to Rebecca Trent at The Creek. Shout out to Lewis at Poster Dog. I found people that went, you're funny. Come, we'll give you regular spots. Because I was doing check spots and open mics. And finally, when I got a real, like in front of a real crowd, you go, oh, I'm doing stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just build.
Shout out to Makala.
Yeah. She put you up?
She put me up. She was one of the first people to put me up.
You always got
to
remember the first people that put you up, dude.
Shout out to Chloe Ifshin.
Wayne Rada, Lewis J. Gomez, and Rebecca Trent were the three people that were like, I'll give you spots.
Yeah.
Oh, and Dennis at the Laugh Factory. I hope you're all right, dude. He was the bartender. The booker got, it was the Laugh Factory in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
It got, they sold it to a different company. It became Times Square Art Center. And then Dennis was the bartender that became the booker. And he was like, I think you're funny. I'll give you spots. And what's up? I was like, what's up? This is awesome. And then I'd get way too drunk. That was another thing. Michael Rowland's fucking hilarious. Watch him on YouTube. Watch him on Animal Control on Fox. See him live.
Season 1 through 3 on Netflix now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Moved it to Netflix?
Yeah, we got something on Netflix.
That's awesome.
It's really helpful.
Are you on the road at all? People are
seeing it now. Dude, I'm going to be. I was just in Rutherford, New Jersey at Bananas.
Yeah, shout out.
Shout out. Fun.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Hotel, but it's fun.
Hotel, but it's fun. They're doing a good thing over there.
They're doing all right. They've been around since the 80s.
I got no road dates after that, so hopefully something shakes loose soon.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm getting some new dates on the books, we'll fucking go out together.
I would love to.
Yeah, we'll hang out.
I would love to.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Fuck
Michael Rowland rules, and so do you. Thanks for watching this. Goodbye.
Thanks, Dan.